This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of Beneath Copper Falls by Colleen Coble, published by Thomas Nelson and read by Devin O'Day.
Prologue. 2 years earlier. Renee huddled in the garden shed in her pajamas and tried to hear him over the pounding of her heart in her ears, dust motes crowded close in the dim illumination from the full moon glaring through the windows, and she suppressed a sneeze. The stench of gasoline from the mower hung in the air, along with the odor of decaying grass. The smell should have comforted her with its familiarity to what she loved most. But it only added to her terror. The last time she had worked in the garden had been with him. Surely he wouldn't search for her here and would think she'd already started for town. The straps of the backpack bit into her shoulders, and she longed to take it off and hide it, but it was the only evidence she possessed. Evidence of what a monster she had loved. She might need a weapon. Now that her eyes adjusted to the gloom, she darted her gaze around the shed. About 8x8, it overflowed with gardening tools and old pots. The hoe. It might work. Or maybe she could wield the hedge clippers like a sword, though the thought of plunging those steel blades into the chest of a man who'd once whispered sweet words in her ears nearly paralyzed her. The clippers would be less cumbersome than the hoe. As she lifted the shear, something fell from the workbench. The clatter sounded as loud as a crack of lightning overhead. She froze and listened for footsteps heading her way. Nothing. The breath eased out of her chest, and she moved in a half-crouched position toward the door in her bare feet. She twisted the knob, and the latch released a soft click. Renee waited a moment before she pushed the door open a few inches to peer out. The moonlight shone on her sweet home. A home she thought she'd be sharing with the perfect husband. Her vision blurred, and she swiped the tears away. He was a psychopath, and she'd fallen for his act, hard. Her warm breath fogged in the cool Washington air. Spring came in fits and starts in this northwest corner of the state, and today's warm 60 degrees had plunged to 40 after the sunset. Nothing moved across the lawn to the wide front porch. Her car, an older Miata, beckoned her from the driveway. If only she'd had time to grab the keys. She opened the door wider and stepped out. The ground was nearly frozen, but maybe the soles of her feet would go numb soon, and she wouldn't notice. If she could cut through the woods lining the edge of her property, she'd reach the road leading to town. Maybe a third shift worker at one of the factories would be getting off or heading into work. Her feet carried her over the frosty grass toward the birch trees. A shadow moved to her right, and she whirled around, then relaxed. One of her goats was moving to the water trough. But even as the tension edged from her shoulders, a hard hand fell on her left arm. He whipped her around toward him. His handsome face contorted to match the monster she realized he truly was. He ripped the backpack from her. "I thought you were different from the rest, Renee." She tipped her chin up, though she shuddered inside at the remorseless glare in his eyes. "The rest of the women you killed, you mean?" "I was really going to marry you. The others failed me, but you were perfect." His long fingers caressed her cheek, and his eyes darkened when she flinched. "Why did you have to go snooping? I didn't want to hurt you. You brought this on yourself." His gaze shifted down as his hand dropped away to fish for something in his pocket. Now was her chance. She spun around to run, but he grabbed her arm again, then marched her a few feet to her right. Renee had no idea what he planned to do with her until his hand went to the back of her neck, and he shoved her head forward. Cold water closed around her face and head until her hands gripped the metal edge of the goat's water trough. Using the trough as leverage, she fought to lift her face out of the water, but her puny strength was nothing compared to those muscles he worked out every day. Her vision began to darken. Boone. Chapter 1. A military ball was the last place she expected to be tonight. Dana Newell craned her neck and looked around the ballroom filled with dress uniforms and women in formal gowns. She'd barely managed to remember her name as her unsmiling brother steered her through the receiving line, but she had to pull herself together. She had to do Chris proud. She forced herself to smile and act the part of an elegant companion. They stopped in front of his superior, Major White. Though middle-aged, he held his trim body erect, and his brown eyes were sharp below his short, salt-and-pepper hair. The major took her hand and pressed it firmly, with strong fingers. "Ah, this must be your sister, Lieutenant. Thanks for bringing her. Ms. Newell, I wanted to thank you personally for talking my wife through the Heimlich when our grandson choked on that cracker. It saved his life. We're most appreciative. She wanted to thank you as well, but she fell ill with the flu today." Heat washed up Dana's face. "I'm glad I was able to help, sir." The terrifying dispatch call had lingered with her because she'd heard the little guy choking on the other end of the phone. It was outcomes like this that drove her to stick with a difficult job of emergency dispatch. They chatted a few more minutes, then Chris guided her on down the receiving line. Her face hurt from keeping the smile pinned in place. She couldn't let her brother down by gawking or acting ill at ease. He hadn't wanted to bring her, but his protective streak often chafed. She found herself relaxing just a tiny bit as they finished the receiving line, then found chairs. "I'll get us something to drink," Chris said. She watched him stop and flirt with a pretty blonde on the way to the food table. Few women could resist her brother's blonde good looks and genial manner. Dana studied the room while he was gone. Thank goodness Chris had helped her pick out her dress, a demure T-length number in royal blue that didn't show too much skin. All the women were adorned like they were attending a Hollywood premiere, though in modest necklines. Left to herself, she would have picked her best church dress and called it good enough. She tapped her toe a bit to God Bless the USA playing in the background. The back of her neck prickled, and she glanced around before her gaze collided with the most handsome man she'd ever met. Four women clustered around him, and snippets of their conversation floated above the sound of Lee Greenwood's voice. "Garrett, I heard you won the marksmanship medal. I'm not surprised. You can do anything." "Garrett, would you get me something to drink? I'm parched." He didn't seem to hear the women vying for his attention. His blue eyes never left Dana's, and he wove his way toward her through the women as they plucked at his uniform sleeves and demanded he stay to talk with them. Dana couldn't have moved if a tornado was sweeping through the place. Not with those eyes burning into hers, with a question her heart responded to immediately. It was as if she'd been waiting for him all her life. Her lips parted when he reached her, but she couldn't speak. He stopped only 6 inches away, well within her personal space, but she didn't step back. "I haven't seen you before."
I came with Chris."
She forced the bright smile again. He reached out and brushed a curl off her cheek. "You're Dana? He didn't mention how beautiful you are."
"Beautiful? Her?"
Dana's light brown hair was neither blonde nor lustrously dark brown, and she was average in every way. But he could believe what he wanted about her as long as he looked at her that way. "I love your eyes. They're like the sea, full of mystery and promise." His fingers lingered on her face. Heat spread across her skin in a slow, delicious wave.
You know my brother?"
He nodded. "I'm Garrett. Garrett Waterman. We're buds. Well, at least we were. I'm not so sure now that I know he's been holding out on me." He took her hand. "Let's step outside for some air. It's too hot in here."
Her lonely heart soaked up the admiration in his eyes, and just like that, she was his.
"You know I hate pot roast." Garrett lifted the tray of food and glared at her over the top of it. "This was supposed to be a special night. I've been gone for 2 weeks, and this is how you show me you've missed me?"
Her fingers went to the tiny scar by her right eye, and she bit her lip. Where had the charming man she'd fallen in love with 9 months ago gone? She swallowed hard. "You never said you didn't like pot roast. Besides, you might like mine. Everyone loves it. It's my grandmother's recipe."
What was she thinking? She shouldn't have argued with him, not when he was in this state. She'd seen what happened when he got mad. His mouth tight, he carried the entire tray of roast over to the trash and dumped everything into it. All thought of placating him vanished, and she leaped up from her chair.
"How dare you? I bought an expensive cut of grass-fed beef and worked all day on this meal." She snatched the empty plate from his hand and walked to the oversized stainless steel sink, already filled with soapy water. She plunged the tray into the water, but before she could wash it, his hard fingers clamped onto the back of her neck. "Let go of me!" She wasn't afraid, not while the adrenaline from her righteous anger raged through her. She tried to twist out of his grip, but he still worked out, even though he'd gotten out of the military. "I said, let go of me or I'll call the police."
"You're not calling anyone."
His voice pitched low to a calm and deadly timbre. He pushed her head down into the sink. Warm water filled her nose and mouth, and the suds stung her eyes. She gripped the counter with both hands and tried to pull out of the water to breathe, but he held her neck relentlessly in place until her chest burned and spots danced in front of her eyes. "He's going to kill me." Panic gave her a new surge of energy, and she fought with all her strength, though her efforts were useless. Then his fingers moved to her hair, and he yanked her head out of the water. She drew a sweet lungful of air and sank to the floor, where she gulped in oxygen as fast as she could until her vision began to clear. By the time she found the strength to stand, he had gone. She staggered to the bathroom in time to vomit. Surely he hadn't really meant to hurt her, had he? She hugged the cold porcelain of the toilet and let the tears fall, for the ruin of a dream that she should have seen was too good to be true. 3 months later. 911, what is your emergency? Dana rested her fingers on the keyboard to enter the last call of her night shift. The familiar background noise of talking and keyboards in the dispatch room enfolded her, a room she would say goodbye to today. Her departure couldn't come too soon for her. "My husband's had a heart attack. Please, I need help." The woman's desperate voice quivered. Dana inputted the nature of the emergency and checked the address on the computer. "What is your address?" The woman rattled off the same address on the screen. "Stay on the line with me while I send paramedics on the way." Dana put reassurance into her voice and keyed in the request for an ambulance. "He's not breathing." "The ambulance is on the way. Do you know CPR?" "No. I never took any training. I should have learned. I knew he had a heart issue." "Take a deep breath, ma'am. This is not your fault, okay?" Dana badly wanted to pray with her, but after glancing sideways at her co-worker, she opted to shoot up a silent prayer. Even though this was her last shift, she'd gotten into trouble so many times that it had become impossible to speak up any longer. Dana stayed on the line and tried to keep the woman calm until the siren's wail came over the phone. "The ambulance is here. I have to get the door. Thank you for being here with me." The line clicked and went dead. Dana rubbed her tight right shoulder. Clear emergencies always left her tense and upset. Another call rang through. 911, what is your emergency?
"Miss me, baby?"
Garrett's deep voice impaled her. Her fingers went to her throat. "How dare you call me here, especially after what you did?" His voice always got to her. Was she wrong to run away? Maybe he could change. She gave a slight shake of her head. Not this time. She wouldn't let him talk her into going back again. She absently rubbed at the tiny scar by her eye.
"Look, I just lost my temper, okay? I've got a lot of stress right now."
The lump in her throat kept her words locked down for a long moment. A year ago, life had seemed so different. The first time Garrett had looked her way, she'd been shocked. With his sun-streaked blonde hair and blue eyes, he looked like a gorgeous surfer instead of a crack sniper for the Marines. Once upon a time, she thought his expertise was fascinating. Now, it terrified her. Friends kept telling her to be patient, that he probably had PTSD. But she didn't want to end up dead. And really, why had she even thought true happiness could find her? From the age of 8, she'd learned life could change in an instant into something twisted and unrecognizable. She blew out a shaky breath. "I'm hanging up now, Garrett. Don't contact me again." She disconnected the call on her keyboard and leaned back in her chair. Sandy Corson, a co-worker in her 50s, swiveled in her chair to look over at Dana. "Garrett again?"
"Yeah."
Dana tucked a strand of hair behind her ear. "But he won't be able to contact me for long. I hate that you're leaving. I'm tired of looking over my shoulder, and I want a fresh start where other people aren't always telling me to give him another chance. Once I'm sure he's off my trail, I'll give you a call and check in. A month ago, an old friend, Bree Matthews, had held a training seminar for search and rescue dogs up in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, and Dana had taken her six-month-old puppy, Phantom, to start learning SAR. A dispatcher job had just fallen into her lap while in Rock Harbor, and the timing couldn't be more perfect. God had opened a door, and she intended to slam it shut behind her as she entered a new phase of life. Going home seemed the right thing to do, even if Garrett knew where she went. Family and friends would support her if he showed up. While she had friends here in Washington, they were the superficial kind, not the heart-to-heart sort who would put themselves in the way of danger for her. She punched out for the last time at 5 o'clock a.m. and hugged her co-workers goodbye before she hurried to the exit. All her belongings were on their way in a moving truck, and she intended to drive until she got sleepy today. The parking garage lights flickered and hummed as she exited the staircase on her level, and the place smelled of tires and oil. The sun wasn't up yet, and the dimly lit space held too many shadows to count. She fished her car keys out of her purse, then frowned when her gaze lit on her blue Toyota Prius leaning to one side. Both tires on the driver's side were flat, and her pulse kicked as she knelt to examine the front one. There was no mistaking the slash at the rim. The back tire was in the same shape. Her heart drummed against her ribs as she rose and looked around. Garrett? She thrust her hand into her purse and wrapped her fingers around her cell phone. I know you did this. His mocking laugh echoed against the concrete walls of the nearly empty parking garage, then fell silent. Where was he? The shadows made it difficult to see. She swallowed hard and eyed the staircase to her left. Could she escape before he tried to grab her? No, he was too fast. She hit the unlock button on her keys, then threw herself under the steering wheel and locked the car. She punched 911 on her phone as a shadow to her left came at her. She ducked as a crowbar smashed into the window beside her. The window shattered, but held together. She screamed and cowered in her seat. His blue eyes narrowed in a hard glare as he lifted the crowbar again. This blow would break the glass and bash her head. Shaking and crying, she brought up the bear spray and aimed it at the largest crack in the window. But before she could press the button, shouts rang out. Garrett whirled and ran for the exit. She exhaled, and with a trembling hand, reached for the door handle. She wouldn't be leaving for Rock Harbor today. Chapter 2. He couldn't see the last of these folks any too soon. Boone Carter shook hands and thanked the family as they piled into their Mercedes SUV. The parents had been more interested in squabbling with their teenage daughters than with hauling in the salmon along the Ontonagon River. He'd taken them out for the day, and by the time they'd been out for half an hour, he realized it was an exercise in futility. His cabin squatted in the woods along the shore of Lake Superior in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. He'd bought the land from his uncle, then built every one of the 10 cabins himself. Carter's Cabins had become known as one of the best places to stay for the adventure seeker, a reputation he'd fought hard to gain. He gave a final wave to his departing guests, then went toward the large red barn housing his outfitter business. His cousin's small red convertible had pulled into the gravel parking lot a few minutes ago. She got out of her car and hurried to join him as he neared the front door. Allison was a beautiful young woman. She and his sister Renee had worked at a small newspaper in Washington. Allison had been a bulldog about finding out who had killed Renee. She had arrived a couple days ago to talk to him about what they'd turned up so far. All their efforts had come to a big, fat zero. He had talked to the lead detective just 2 weeks ago, and the police were stymied too. A familiar wave of grief swamped him, and he tamped it down and smiled at her. Coffee? I need some after dealing with that family. She put her hand on his arm. There's been another murder, Boone. It's eerily like Renee's. Some other family was going through the trauma they'd endured. He shoved open the door and wished he could push away the memories that easily. He led her past the rough wooden counter where one of his employees explained the various backpacking options to two men. In his office, Boone closed the door behind them and went to the coffee pot. The stuff had been sitting there for hours, and he grimaced at the bitter taste. He handed her a cup of the atrocious brew. "You should be finding a good man instead of pursuing an impossible quest like this. It's been 3 years since Renee's death. If the police can't pin down a lead, what hope do we have?" Allison dreamed of being a bona fide investigative reporter, but she was grasping at the wind with this case. His smackdown didn't dim the light in her hazel eyes as she pushed away the coffee, then waved a blue folder his way. "Faith Rogerson, an elementary school teacher in Portland, Oregon. 26, light brown hair and blue eyes. She was supposed to get married the next day, just like Renee. Her engagement ring is missing too, just like Renee's." Allison's mouth flattened to a grim line. "This is his second murder, and I'm going to nail him. I thought of a name for him in the expose. The Groom Reaper." The media would eat up that title. "What makes you think this murder is connected to Renee's?" Allison perched on a ledge at the window. Both deaths were the night before the wedding. Not a week, not 3 days, the night before. And the murder method in both cases was drowning. You have to admit, that's not the usual way a bride might die on the eve of her nuptials. She had a point. Who was she engaged to? Justin Leland. He sells pharmaceuticals. He got back in town just in time for the bachelor party that night and had tried calling her several times. When she didn't answer, he went over around midnight and used his keys to get into the house. He found her in the kitchen. The sink was still full of water. "How'd you find all that out?" "I went to school with the lead reporter at the paper and weaseled it out of him. Renee had been drowned in a stock tank outside. While not the same location as this one, it did hold similarities, and both fiancés had been at a bachelor party. Did you call Leland?" "I tried, but his voicemail was full. The local media is probably all over it. I'm sure no one has connected the two cases yet, if they're connected." Allison flipped open the folder. "Look at Faith's picture." The woman in the picture held a vague resemblance to his sister. His interest stirred. "Anything else?" "Yep." She flipped a couple of pages in the folder. "They plan to honeymoon in Jamaica, just like Renee." "That's a popular honeymoon destination. Any pictures of this Leland fellow?" It was the one thing that rankled. He'd never met Renee's fiancé. He'd planned to be at the wedding until an accident landed him in the hospital the day before he was supposed to fly to Washington. After the police had cleared Tyler, Boone had tried to call his cell number and found the account had been closed. It didn't necessarily mean anything, since Dixon could have moved and started a new job. But the killer might also have eliminated him and left clues this time. "No pictures that I could find. There wasn't an engagement picture, and there were no photos on her cell phone of the two of them, which seemed odd. Another similarity." He stared at Allison, then reached for his phone. "I think I'd better mention this to Detective Morgan. I have a call in to him." His cell phone dinged, and he looked at the time. "I need to run an errand. I'll let you know what Morgan says." Though her eyes burned with fatigue from the 3-day drive, passing the Rock Harbor welcome sign filled Dana with new vigor. The familiar streets and storefronts enveloped her with a sense of homecoming. Her family had lived in the country, but she had gone to Rock Harbor at least once a week for shopping. Driving down Houghton Street was like stepping into a Norman Rockwell painting. She spotted Bree's familiar green Jeep Cherokee parked by the Suomi Cafe on Kichigami Street, just off Houghton, and Dana's stomach growled. She hadn't eaten breakfast, and it was already past 5 and getting dark. She made her way back to Kichigami, then pulled her Prius behind the Jeep and got out with Phantom. She left her vehicle unlocked in a sudden burst of defiance. This was Rock Harbor, where no one locked their houses or cars. She was safe here. The bell on the cafe's door jingled as she opened it, and Dana stood for a moment, inhaling the familiar scents, panukaku, beef pasties, and pula. Snippets of conversation floated to her, familiar topics like the upcoming winter festival and the fish that got away. A smile stretched her lips when she saw Bree sitting at a booth with Samson at her feet. Her friend's short red curls were tousled, and a smile lit her heart-shaped face as she talked with animation to another woman, whose back was to the door. Bree looked 25 instead of 39. Dana threaded her way through the cafe to the booth. "Care if I join you?" Samson leaped up to touch noses with Phantom. "Dana!" Bree jumped to her feet and enveloped her in a hug. Her hair was scented with a raspberry panakaku on her plate. "I thought you'd be here several days ago. I tried to call your cell phone, but I got a recording saying the number wasn't in service." Dana returned the hug. "I should have called you to let you know I'd be late. I disconnected the phone until I got here to buy a new one. I had a delay." She and Bree had become friends when Bree moved to town with her first husband, Rob Nichols. Dana had babysat for her tiny son, Davy, quite often. Rob had died, and Bree remarried a park ranger. They had 4-year-old twins now, Hannah and Hunter. Dana glanced at the booth's other occupant, who had stood as well.
"Alley Cat, I didn't know you were living back here."
She hugged Allison Hegney in a tight squeeze.
"I haven't seen you, gosh. It's been at least 5 years, the last class reunion, I think."
"I haven't heard that old nickname in forever." The leggy woman returned the hug, her light brown hair cascading down her back in a straight, shiny curtain. "I took a leave of absence for a month. Have a seat. I want to get caught up." She sat and scooted over on the booth seat. Dana slid her purse from her shoulder and ordered Phantom to lie down by Samson.
"You won't believe what's been happening."
Reliving the past year of being on the mountaintop in love, only to come crashing to reality the first time Garrett hurt her, made her voice go rough. "The first couple of times, I just thought it was my fault, that I'd been a nag or something. Then I realized he had a violent, possessive streak. When I told him we were through, that's when the trouble really started. He began following me and having friends call to tell me I was wrong, that he had PTSD from the military, and I needed to be more understanding. I even took him back a few times, but he got rough again. I knew if I stayed, he'd eventually really hurt me."
"Or kill you," Bree said softly.
Dana nodded.
"Or kill me."
She launched into the attack that had delayed her arrival. "It took 2 days to get Dolly repaired, then another 3 days to get here."
"Dolly's your car?"
Bree smiled and signaled for Molly, the cafe's longtime waitress. She brought over coffee and a plate holding a pasty.
"I knew you'd want your favorite, Dana.
Welcome home." She still wore her graying hair in a low ponytail, and her smile enveloped Dana.
"Thanks, Molly. You know me too well."
The beef gravy in the pasty hit her tongue, and the explosion of flavor made her just plain giddy. How good it was to be home. Allison lifted her coffee cup and stared at Dana with troubled hazel eyes.
"That guy sounds just too creepy. I hope he doesn't figure out where you've gone and come here."
"I'm sure he'll assume I came home, but I have lots of friends here, and for now, I'm going to live with Chris for a while." Her brother had bought a house on Quincy Hill nearly a year and a half ago, when he decided to get out of the Marines and settle in their hometown. He's already restored the downstairs for himself, and he says, "I can have the other floors until I want to get my own place."
Bree frowned and tucked a red curl behind her ear.
"But he's gone a lot with his job. I don't think he'll be much protection."
"True, but his house is right here in town, within hailing distance of the sheriff's office, and I'll have Phantom."
She reached down to rub her dog's ears. She'd given him the name the moment she picked him out from the litter, the only black lab in a sea of yellow.
"I'm done letting Garrett terrorize me, and quite honestly, if he comes here, he'll know I have plenty of support. I think it's over."
Bree's green eyes still held skepticism. "I hope you're right."
"Is he in jail for attacking you?"
She looked away.
"Well, no. I didn't press charges because I didn't want to have to go back for a trial or anything. I just want to get away from him."
"So he could be on his way even now." Dana bit her lip and stared across the table at Bree.
"I suppose so.
I don't want to scare you, but you need to be on guard. Always lock your car. Keep your bear spray at the ready any time you're by yourself. Get a security system installed at the house." Dana sank against the booth back.
I have bear spray. But this is Rock Harbor. No one locks up.
Bree's eyes narrowed. You've got to start. A stalker isn't like any other danger. He's not rational and is only focused on revenge. Your ex proved that by attacking you in the parking garage, he had to know the police were just steps away. That's brazen.
Bree was right. Dana had seen it 100 times in her job. She just hadn't wanted to believe it could apply to her. She blew out a shaky breath. Let's talk about something else for a while. I want to forget all about Garrett. She turned a smile toward Allison. So, you're here on leave seeing your family?
Allison ran her finger around the cup's rim. Well, it's more than that. My cousin was murdered 3 years ago.
I don't think you ever met Renee.
I came to town to go over the latest details with her brother. He lives here.
Dana's chest squeezed.
I'm so sorry. Did they find her killer?
Allison shook her head. I took some investigative psychology classes in school before I changed my major from criminal justice. I felt the killing was the work of a budding serial killer. His M.O. was too odd, and there's been another similar murder this week.
How did he murder them?
Drowning. My cousin was drowned in a water tank for her goats, and the second woman was drowned in the kitchen sink.
Dana clenched her hands together in her lap, and her skin prickled. She glanced out the cafe's windows. This sounded way too familiar.
Chapter 3. Dana parked on Quincy Street and craned her neck to take in the 3-story brick building in front of her in the fading light. Once upon a time, copper miners trudged the steps to their rooms here at the Copper Junction Hotel. The sign was long gone now, and her brother had replaced the aging stoop with an elegant porch with beautiful posts and a new front door in dark red. She'd fallen in love with it the second she'd seen it a month ago. The thick clouds overhead promised snow and cast a gloom over the landscape. The cold November wind cut through her thin jacket, and she quickly ascended the brick steps to the welcoming front door. Phantom bounded after her and sniffed at the door. The lock opened with a click, and she turned the doorknob to open it.
Chris isn't home.
She turned at the deep male voice behind her. The man on the sidewalk looked like he'd be more at home in Wyoming or Arizona with his boots and cowboy hat. If she wasn't mistaken, those boots were snakeskin. His hat shadowed his face, but she got an impression of a strong jaw as he took a step closer. He wore a black and red Arizona Cardinals jacket and jeans. She squared her shoulders and stared him down.
And you are?
He snapped his fingers.
You're Dana, aren't you? I've seen pictures.
He retreated toward a black pickup that was parked behind her.
I have some stuff for you.
He was probably 6'2" or so, and his long stride had him at the truck in seconds. The man opened the passenger door and reached inside. A dog that looked more wolf than anything leaped down to follow as he turned toward her with a box full of groceries.
I was going to leave the food for you. Chris has been gone for a month, and anything left in the fridge is likely to be growing something green.
She glanced at the box and spied bread, peanut butter, cereal, coffee, milk, cream, and butter.
And you are?
Close up, he was even more handsome than her first vague impression. Dark hair fell over his forehead from under his hat. The cologne he wore was pleasant, something spicy with sandalwood.
Boone Carter, this is Spirit.
His hand rested atop the dog's head. Spirit took a step forward to sniff Phantom.
I've heard the name.
Chris had started ice sailing when he came back to town 2 years ago, and Boone had taken her brother under his wing. According to Chris, Boone was the best outfitter around. Even though he was Chris's friend, her hackles stayed up. Something about him put her on edge. He tipped his head toward the door.
If you'll open it, I'll carry this to the kitchen.
Heat flooded her cheeks.
Of course.
The door swung open without a sound, and she stepped into the entry. The walnut floors and wide trim contrasted with the pale gray-green walls, a color she'd helped Chris pick out when he was redoing the place. She flipped on the overhead chandelier and blinked when light flooded the space. He strode past her.
This way.
The dogs on his heels, he pressed the huge curving staircase and disappeared through a door on the other side of the foyer. The living room to the right of the entry was large, with floor-to-ceiling windows along two walls. She took in the space with the new white tables and blue and white furniture. The nautical touches made her smile. Chris loved the water. She hurried after Boone across gleaming hardwood floors. She went through the dining space with its white distressed table and chairs that opened to a large kitchen with gray cabinets. She'd had to talk Chris into the color, but it was perfect. Boone was unpacking the box at a large marble island. She walked around the side of the island to face him. Now that she saw him square on in the full light, she barely bit back a gasp. Scars ridged the right side of his face from jaw to temple. He paused, and his lips twisted in a grimace.
Seen enough?
He grabbed the milk and yogurt, then turned to the refrigerator. She reached toward his retreating back, then dropped her hand. I'm sorry. You were burned? Burn scars were hard to miss.
Forest fire. I was a smoke jumper.
After depositing the milk and yogurt, he faced her again. If not for the smoldering heat in his eyes, she would have guessed he was used to comments about his face. The scars look old. When did it happen?
About 5 years ago. Look, I'm sure you're tired. You have luggage?
She nodded. I can get it, though. The groceries are more than enough. I really appreciate it. He held out a tanned, muscular hand, and she stared at it blankly for a long moment.
Your car keys?
His tone told her he wouldn't take no for an answer, so she pulled them from her coat pocket and dropped them into his palm. Her warm feelings vanished in an instant as she watched him leave.
Stay,
he told Spirit. Noticing an injury was a normal part of her job, but he'd made her feel small and mean. Had that been his intention? She could give him the benefit of the doubt. Chris might have more information about the injury and why the man was so touchy. Or maybe Allison or Bree would know. Dana draped her coat on the back of a chair and went to hold open the door while he hauled in her suitcases. Spirit and Phantom padded along behind her. Spirit's vivid blue eyes made her feel as if he was watching her every move for his master.
This all you got?
He set down the two medium suitcases. The rest is on the moving truck. It will be here in a couple of days. I just needed some clothing and essentials in the meantime. He jerked his head to the left.
Tell me which one you want, and I'll haul the suitcases there.
I can handle it from here. Thanks so much. Was it too much to ask him to get out of here? After the stress of the last week, she wanted some peace and quiet. He could lug that chip on his shoulder right out of her life and let her be. He picked up the suitcases and looked at her.
Well?
Upstairs, the biggest room, the one on the left. He nodded and headed up the curving staircase with both dogs loping along behind him. Gritting her teeth, she followed him to the top of the stairs where it opened onto a wide hallway. The paint was a fading, dull green. She planned to paint it pronto. Three doorways opened off the hall, and he carried her luggage to the large bedroom on her left, then set the cases down on the polished wood floors. It held an old iron bed with a sagging queen mattress, but it was clean, and she had plans for how to make it hers.
This is nice.
He folded his arms across his chest and gazed down at her.
I get a little testy when someone stares. I'm sure you're going to plunge into the rumor cesspool, so I'll just tell you straight up. I was caught in a firestorm and the gear didn't protect me. Yes, plastic surgery would make it less noticeable, but the scars remind me that love is fickle, and most women wouldn't want to look across the breakfast table at this every morning.
He touched the right side of his face.
As my fiancée was quick to tell me.
She was still gaping after him when the front door slammed behind Boone and his dog. Bree's training center was a pole building on a tract of land surrounded by woods. The lake behind the building was perfect for water search training. Kichigami Search and Rescue Training Center's reputation had grown exponentially. Today, she had 10 new students who needed her attention, but her thoughts kept heading back to Dana's predicament. Most graduates went on to volunteer for area searches, and a few die-hard handlers, like her, made a career of it. Bree glanced at her watch. Nearly 5. She was meeting Allison at 6 to take Dana dinner, so she needed to wrap up class.
She forced herself to focus. Take your dogs around back where they can't see. Laurie, you stay here. You can be the victim today. Cade's younger sister had been living with them since August when she finally graduated from college. Jobs here in the UP had been scarce, but Bree hoped something would turn up soon for Laurie. The rest of the students took the dogs around the building. Laurie got into the scratch box, and Bree dropped the guillotine-type door into position. Carrying a bag with the scent article, she went around the corner. The dogs were smelling the scent article, and the students would release each dog individually and see how long it took them to find Laurie in the rough wooden box. Zorro, Laurie's border collie mix, barked and raced around the corner. He drove straight for the scratch box, jumped up on it, and barked. He grabbed a stick on the ground, then carried it to Bree with his tail held high in triumph. Each of the dogs got their chance, and most found Laurie in less than 5 minutes. They were all improving, and Bree ended the training session with praise and treats for the dogs. Laurie followed her and the dogs inside the building. "I have something I want to talk to you about." Uh-oh. When Laurie adopted that serious tone, Bree braced for impact. "Okay?" She snapped her fingers to Samson, and he limped over to press against her leg. He had suffered a minor cut on a paw during the exercises today, so she tended to it. She'd fed him a raw food diet all these years, and he still had very little gray in his rough, curly coat. Most people quickly guessed the German Shepherd part of him from the black and tan of his fur, but the curls were pure chow. He slurped up the water she had poured into his bowl, and Zorro did the same. Then both dogs curled together on the floor to rest by her feet. Laurie had recently cut her long brown hair into a becoming shoulder-length style that flipped up on the ends and accentuated her bone structure. Her blue eyes held a trace of worry as she propped one booted foot on her chair's bottom rung. "I got a job," Laurie's eyes gleamed. "That's great. Where will you be working?" "I'll have to travel all over the place. I'll only be home once in a while." Laurie motioned around the space. "I won't be able to help you here any longer. I hope that's okay." "I'll manage." "You hate being stuck in a one-horse town like Rock Harbor. What will you be doing?" Laurie stared at Bree as if to make sure she was really okay with the news. "I'll be an auditor. I always said that was the one accounting job I'd never do." She made a face. "Going in and looking for all the mistakes the employees have made is like standing on a shooting range with a bullseye on my back. It will be uncomfortable all the time, but it'll be a great experience." Bree rose and hugged her. Laurie went tense for a long moment, then hugged her back. Bree pulled away and gave her a little shake. "And you never know where it might lead. You'll get to see some new places." Laurie shrugged off Bree's grip and tucked a strand of brown hair behind her ear. "I won't get to see Zoe much. When I gave her up for adoption, I never wanted her to know who I was. Now that she does, it seems cruel to leave her." Bree's heart swelled at Laurie's admission. The girl had matured in the past year. She thought of other people instead of only herself. Bree had always loved Laurie, even though she wanted to shake her at times. At 16, Laurie had a daughter out of wedlock, who Mason and Hillary Kaliva had adopted. Hillary was Bree's first husband's sister and the town mayor. Mason had been Rock Harbor's sheriff forever. Zoe adored them both, so Bree was sure she'd be fine. "Zoe's got a good mom and dad, and you can see her at least a few times a year." "I guess." Laurie patted her leg and Zorro came to her. "I've got to go home and pack." "Zorro won't be able to come with me. Will that be a problem?" "Of course not. When do you start?" "I fly to Lihue, Hawaii on Sunday. I'll be there for a week, then to Oregon for a week." "Where will you stay when you're gone? Hotels?" Bree didn't like the sound of that. Without stability, Laurie could fall back into her old partying ways. "Don't look so worried, Mom." Laurie grabbed her coat and shrugged it on. "The company has several condos, and I'll have my own place when I'm there. I'll be able to cook and invite friends over." She wrinkled her nose. "If I make any friends with a schedule like that." "You will. People gravitate to you naturally." Bree walked with her to the door. "Have you told Cade yet?" "Yeah. I called him this morning and endured the lecture about being on my guard and making sure the doors are locked at night." "Cade, ever the protector. Bree opened the door and smiled.
He loves you.
I know, but sheesh, give me a break. I'm 23.
Bree pressed her lips together and looked away. Laurie didn't need a reminder of her past poor choices. They'd pray this job was the right thing. She shut the door behind her sister-in-law as Samson came to press against her leg.
That leaves me without help, boy. Now what?
Samson's soft brown eyes seemed to say he'd do all he could.
Chapter 4. Spirit leaped onto the back seat of Boone's big truck and settled onto the seat. Boone slid under the wheel and drummed his fingers against it. Until today, he would have said no stairs on earth could unsettle him. Why had he acted like such a jerk with Dana? Now that he'd cooled off, he could admit to himself that her behavior had been courteous and professional. She was a 911 call dispatcher and had likely seen and heard it all. She'd almost acted like a doctor or nurse with the clinical questions. Something about her had gotten under his skin. Maybe it was the fear and vulnerability in those big blue eyes. Chris had told him about the ex-fiancé and his threats. Boone had promised to keep an eye on Dana and make sure she was all right, but if he turned into a porcupine every time he was around her, it would be a difficult assignment. She seemed nice enough, but he had been taken in by beauties like her before. Never again. He glanced at the time. 6 in the evening in Washington wasn't the greatest time to be calling Morgan again, but Boone had already tried twice, and the detective hadn't returned his calls. He pulled out his cell phone and called a familiar number. Detective Morgan answered on the first ring. His voice always reminded Boone of molasses, smooth and southern. Harry Morgan sounded like a transplant from Alabama.
Detective, it's Boone Carter.
I was just about to call you. I've been out all day and just got back to my office. I assume you're calling for an update on your sister, but I'm sorry to say we have no new leads.
Boone slid down in the seat, and a picture of Renee on the tree swing behind their house slammed into his head. She'd been 4 to his 8, and she shrieked, "Higher, Boone, higher!" with every pump of her short, tanned legs. Had she cried out for him at the end? He'd always been the one she turned to when she needed $100 for the rent or a shoulder to cry on after the last dirtbag had dumped her. Moisture flooded his eyes, and he blinked it back.
I wondered if you caught wind of the Faith Rogerson murder.
Can't say as I have.
The detective's drawl grew more syrupy, a sure sign of interest. She was killed the night before she was to be married, just like Renee. Boone laid out everything Allison uncovered.
It sounds like it could be the same killer.
Where was this?
Portland, Oregon.
I'll check into it.
One more thing. Have you had any contact with Tyler Dixon lately?
No, sir. We cleared him, remember?
And he hasn't called to check on the investigation?
Nope.
I tried to call his cell phone, but it was disconnected.
No crime in that. He might have moved and gotten a new one.
Boone couldn't argue that.
What if the killer got to him, too?
Spirit must have sensed his mood because he pressed his head into the crook of Boone's neck and huffed warm breath against his skin. He rubbed the dog's nose, and Spirit finally retreated to the back seat and lay down.
I will say, it's a little odd Dixon hasn't checked in. I was just looking at my notes, and the last time I spoke with him was 18 months ago. Usually people call on occasion to check the status. You call every couple of weeks.
His tone was mild, as though Boone's frequent calls hadn't been the nuisance Boone had expected.
Is there a way to check on his status?
I could call his employer. I think there's a number in my records.
Could you let me know what you find out?
Detective Morgan didn't answer for a moment. He cleared his throat.
What is it you're suggesting, Mr. Carter? I think it's more than your fear for Dixon's safety.
I'm still not convinced he didn't kill Renee.
He had an ironclad alibi. 3 people placed him at the bachelor party until he left to go check on why your sister wasn't answering her phone.
I've heard all that, but the party was being held 5 miles down the road. What if he slipped out for a few minutes, killed her, then went back to the party? The thing turned into a drunken binge as they watched the football game. It wouldn't be hard for exact times to be a little iffy for the men who were there.
Morgan heaved a sigh.
Listen to yourself, Mr. Carter. What you're saying doesn't really make sense. Renee put up quite the struggle. Water was sloshed all over the ground around the watering tank. Whoever did this would have been soaked and chilled to the bone. I know the lack of progress in the case is frustrating, but we want to find the killer, not just book a suspect.
A wind gust rattled the truck, and Boone leaned his forehead against the cold window glass. His warm breath puffed white in the November chill. He wanted to reject the thought that the sheriff might be right. But the truth was he missed his sister, with an ache that only grew sharper with each passing day. He'd hoped finding justice for Renee would be a balm on his pain, but it looked like that might never happen. It had been 3 years, and an arrest wasn't any closer than the night he'd gotten the call. No DNA match to the skin under her fingernails, no clues, and no real leads. If only he'd been there for the wedding. He lifted his head and started the engine.
Thanks for your honesty, Detective. Please let me know what you hear about Dixon. I'll try to keep my suspicions in line.
Dana loved her room on the second floor, with its gray-green walls and fresh white linens, even though the attached bathroom had an aging marble-tile shower and floor. It had a timeless elegance. On his last trip home, Chris must have bought the fluffy towels and expensive toiletries to welcome her. She had barely unpacked her suitcases when the doorbell rang. Her stomach rumbled as she hurried downstairs to answer the door, and she glanced at her watch. A little after 6. She doubted Boone had returned, but she hoped she'd get the chance to apologize to him. His parting words kept ringing in her head, but he wouldn't want her compassion. He struck her as the type who wasn't afraid to take on a battalion by himself, much like Garrett. That type of he-man was best avoided. She spotted two figures through the glass and opened the door with a fresh surge of excitement at the sight of her friends. Hoods up over their heads to combat the wind, Bree and Allison stood on the porch. Bree's nose was pink, and Allison shivered a little as the wind howled with joy to chase leaves along the yard. Bree held up the crock pot in her hands. "I thought we'd share some chili with you for dinner tonight." Bantam pushed past Dana and leaped on Bree's leg. She petted him a moment, then made him get down.
"Sorry, I didn't bring Samson Phantom."
"I was just feeling lonely." Dana stepped out of the way to allow them in. She spied the pie in Allison's hand.
"That wouldn't be your mom's peanut butter pie, would it? She made it just for you and guarded it with her life from Dad."
Allison paused on the rug as Dana shut the door and kicked off her boots.
"Which way is the kitchen?"
"I'll show you. How'd you both get away for the evening? No kids, not even Samson." Bree kicked off her boots, too, and followed Dana. "Kate decided to take them all to see the new Disney movie and told me to get a pedicure or something. This sounded a lot more fun since I haven't seen you in ages. Samson cut his paw in training this afternoon, so I left him on the bed resting." She stopped in the kitchen doorway.
"Wow, this is gorgeous. I love the gray cabinets.
Is that a marble countertop?"
"Yes."
Dana took the slow cooker from Bree and set it on the large island, then removed some bowls from the cabinet.
"I'm not sure if there are any crackers."
Allison held up a plastic bag. "We came prepared." Dana's mouth watered at the rich aroma of tomatoes and onion as she ladled up the soup. The women carried their steaming bowls to the seating area at the island. She grabbed her purse and took out her sea salt tin in case she needed it. Dana perched on a stool beside Allison.
"I bet Chris has never even eaten in here. He's probably thrown something in the microwave, then eaten it in front of the TV in the living room."
She tasted the chili and nearly moaned as the chilies and tomato sauce hit her tongue.
"This is so good. I've only had fast food for the past 3 days. Anyone want something to drink?
Chris asked your cousin Boone Carter to bring over some things." She snapped her fingers and made Phantom lay down at her feet. Allison had been smiling, but at the mention of Boone's name, she went somber.
"Poor guy has been through so much."
Dana clapped her mouth shut. She wasn't about to join the rumor mill Boone had mentioned. She took a big spoonful of chili to mask her silence. Bree crushed crackers into her chili.
"His sister's death really hit him hard."
Dana choked on her mouthful. He didn't mention his sister. Car accident?
No. Allison's voice softened. He's my cousin, so she's talking about Renee.
Your cousin, who was drowned the night before her wedding?
Dana's fears came surging back. Maybe it was all in her head, but she wanted reassurance that Garrett couldn't possibly be a killer.
I thought of Garrett when you mentioned the drowning.
Bree put down her spoon. You want to talk about it?
Dana's eyes filled with tears, and she nodded. She hadn't told anyone about this except the police.
It all started so innocently. I fixed a pot roast for dinner, and I had no idea he didn't like roast. He never said.
Stop it. Allison reached across the table to grab her arm. Stop blaming yourself right now. Whatever happened, it wasn't your fault for fixing something he didn't like.
Dana's throat spasmed.
You're right. I know you're right.
She took a deep, calming breath.
His mouth got all tight and pinched when he entered the kitchen and saw the food on the table. I could tell something was wrong, but I never dreamed he'd get so upset.
She didn't want to relive the terror of that moment, but it washed over her, tightening her chest and constricting her breath. She was gasping by the time she finished telling them about Garrett, submerging her head in the sink's water.
Bree and Allison both looked shaken.
You're lucky he didn't kill you, Bree said.
Seeing you again last month was my opportunity to get away from him. You were a lifesaver.
Allison's eyes narrowed.
You said he'd been gone for 2 weeks. Does he travel a lot? Ever go to Washington or Oregon?
Dana nodded.
He's a Glock salesman and is gone all the time, usually 2 to 4 weeks at a time. Seattle and several cities in Oregon are his usual stops.
Allison reached for the notebook in her purse.
I'd like to hear more about Garrett.
Chapter 5. He couldn't get Allison's theory out of his head. Boone rubbed his scar and stared at the flames flickering in the stone fireplace. The kitchen still held the aroma of his microwaved lasagna. Spirit eyed him mournfully from his rug by the kitchen door. He danced around, begging for a walk, until Boone gave him an emphatic no. He looked up at a knock at the front door. Who was out in this 50-mile-an-hour wind? He went to the door and opened it. Allison stood on the step, huddled in her peacoat.
You look frozen.
He let her in and shut the door behind her. A whisper of her car's pine air freshener followed in her wake.
I need to talk to you.
Shivering, she walked toward the fireplace and held out her hands toward the warmth. He took her coat and grabbed a throw from the back of the sofa for her. She pulled the armchair closer to the fire and snuggled under the throw.
Thanks. Want some coffee or hot tea?
Not just yet. Maybe in a little while.
She stared into the fire with a pensive expression.
Bree and I talked to Dana tonight. She said you brought over some food.
Yeah, that was the errand I left to do when you were here earlier.
I'd promised Chris.
And he could just imagine the conversation they had. He touched the ridges on his cheek. Dana had likely grilled Allison about his scar.
She mentioned something that made me go digging.
That ex-boyfriend of hers, Garrett Waterman, plunged her head underwater in the kitchen sink once, scared her to death.
He went rigid, as a horrific mental image flashed.
He sounds like a real winner.
Faith Rogerson was drowned in her kitchen sink.
Yeah, in Portland.
Waterman lives in Washington. At least I assume so, since that's where Dana lived. What's your point?
She tightened her grip on the blanket at her neck and stared at him.
Garrett is a salesman. He travels all the time selling Glocks. Portland is in his territory. He goes there every few weeks.
He frowned.
You're saying you think Waterman might have been calling himself Justin Leland and masquerading as a pharmaceutical rep? That's a stretch, even for you, Allison.
Color rushed to her cheeks. Just hear me out, okay? Waterman was in Portland when Faith died. It's part of his territory. What if he travels around and woos women in different areas under an assumed name?
Couldn't she see the obvious problem with her theory? Wouldn't the groom worry his picture would get out and his real identity would be exposed?
She wrinkled her nose.
I don't know. You hear about bigamists all the time. Maybe our guy is that type, with a woman in every port. He couldn't run the risk of using his real name.
I don't buy it. For one thing, would the killer say he was a pharmaceutical rep if he really wasn't one? You'd think he'd have to know something about the job.
Both fiancés had claimed to be in the same profession. What are the chances of that? And of their future brides being murdered the same way? I think there's some kind of connection, and I'm going to prove it. The determination on her face sent a shock of alarm down his spine.
This Waterman guy sounds dangerous, Allison. Don't poke a stick at a rattlesnake.
Thoreau still clutched around her. She rose and stalked back and forth in front of the fire. Detective Morgan isn't getting anywhere, is he?
Nope. I called him today and told him about the Rogerson murder, though. He hadn't sniffed it out yet, but he was going to check on it.
Check on it, she scoffed. That's all he ever does is check on it. How about getting off his duff and finding Renee's killer?
You think I don't know that? Look, I'm as frustrated as you are, but we need clues, real facts, to get anywhere. This killer...